Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is the fifth Travel Commons Podcast, and today is Thursday, June 9th, 2005. We have three topics today: the highs and lows of renting cars, reflections on some recent experiences, also some thoughts on spotting famous people in airports. I've been running into some folks lately. And finally, some thoughts about ruts, sort of the well-worn paths that we get into as we travel every week. I'm coming to you today from the Mystic Marriott Hotel and Spa in lovely scenic Groton, Connecticut. Actually, we're not actually in Mystic, Connecticut, the scene of the ever-famous Czech movie Mystic Pizza with Julia Roberts, but instead up the road a piece, or actually down the road a piece. I'm a little twisted on my geography here in Connecticut. But whatever it is, we're a couple of miles either up and down I-95 from Mystic, Connecticut. But we're, as always, on the Travel Commons Podcast because I don't have the fancy audio equipment. There's only just so much that you can haul with you in your carry-on luggage. It's just me and my iRiver, and so I tend to do these recordings in bathrooms, surround myself in tile or as much tile as I can, and hope for the best for the audio. So trying to get just a little touch of reverb bouncing off the tile here. Sort of a light travel week for me this week, whereas last week I was swinging across the West Coast. Across a couple of cities, this week just coming in here to Connecticut for a couple of days. Flew into Hartford, Connecticut, and drove for about an hour down through the wilds of, I guess it's eastern Connecticut, till I got here to Groton. It flew out yesterday, Wednesday. It was a bad day. It was a bad O'Hare day. Kind of a 2-hour delay because of thunderstorms, and it was a hot, humid afternoon. And I guess there were no thunderstorms in Chicago, but I guess they were just sort of loitering around O'Hare all day and just really cramped down on the capacity. And it was one of those sort of rolling delays where we got on the plane, we pushed out. I think they did a runway reconfiguration, and the pilot must have said to us, "We'll be off in just 10 minutes." If he said that once, he said it about a half dozen times because it was another hour before we took off. So, they literally boarded us an hour late, and then we got an hour's worth of just 10 more minutes and we'll leave. The other downside of that flight was I was flying out on American, and it was one of those old TWA planes, one of the old MD-80s that they got off of TWA when TWA went into bankruptcy. And God, I hate those planes. My knees were up against the seat in front of me. They're ugly planes, and I hate them. And it's funny because even the flight crews hate them. When you look at them and you get on and you go, "Oh, TWA plane," and all their eyes roll too. So, they know that they're flying they're in flying crates also. I want to once again thank the folks who've left some very nice comments on the comment board on podcastalley.com and actually took the time to vote for the Travel Commons Podcast. One comment that struck me was someone saying that I was sort of the Bob Newhart of travel commentary, and I took that very much as a compliment, although it suggests that I need to cut down on my stuttering a little bit. The first topic on today's Travel Commons Podcast is around rental cars. And if you think about the travel experience and sort of how it, at least for me, the hierarchy goes, certainly you spend a lot of time and sort of the highest class sort of piece of travel is the airline flight. You spend a lot of time thinking about the airline flight. Then sort of it always feels like the next piece of the travel hierarchy is the hotel room. And then just almost by an afterthought half the time is the rental car. I think a nice rental car can actually add to the experience and really make the travel great. I know when I get to the rental car place, and I walk up and I see my name next to the brand new Mustang, that just sort of makes me smile. And so I get in that 2005 boss looking, and I got to say I really like the new Mustangs. I think they really look cool. You get in that Mustang, you turn that thing on, you hit the gas, hit the accelerator, a little rev, and you're thinking, oh, this is great. Of course, then you get on the highway, you go about 80 miles an hour, and maybe you get flagged for a ticket, like happened to me recently in Ohio, but hopefully you don't. But anyhow, I mean, it makes things. Now you compare that to 2 weeks ago when I got into Phoenix, and there I see my name next to a Pontiac Montana minivan. I'm thinking, what did I do to deserve this? The week before, I've got the Mustang and with maybe 50 miles on it, and now I've got the Pontiac Montana minivan with about 36,000 miles on it. So I don't know, maybe it all evens out, But that definitely sort of took the edge off of sort of the enjoyment of me wanting to drive around Phoenix because I looked like a soccer mom. So it's funny where the last thing, and certainly it's the last piece of the travel plans that I make. I always make my airline travel first, then I book a room, and then almost as an afterthought, I book the car. But certainly when I go in and I get a great car, I feel really great. The interesting thing about this is that a lot of the cars that show up at rental car agencies are what they call fleet sales, which are heavily discounted sales. A few years ago, there was a time when Mitsubishi Motors was having a very difficult time selling. Their sales had just dropped through the floor, but yet they had all these ships on the sea coming over from Japan full of cars. There are airline shots of the port in LA where all you could see was just Mitsubishis as far as the eye can see, and they still had more ships coming over. And so they just had to get these cars off the lot so that they could unload more cars. And so suddenly, every car you rented was a brand new Mitsubishi car, which was great from a rental standpoint, but if you really thought about it, you were renting a car that nobody wanted to buy. And nowadays, you kind of get that with some of the GM cars. When you get that Chevy Cavalier or some of those Chevy Malibus, the reason you're getting it is because Chevy can't sell them anyplace else. Now the flip side of that is the brand new is the new Ford Mustang. That car actually is a pretty hot car, and they're selling them pretty well. You will see them in Hertz lots, and in some ways it was Ford's way of getting those cars out on the street and getting people to see them and getting excited about them. I know I was I remember pulling in. I'd rented one of those Mustangs. I think I got it maybe in Miami to the Hertz return, and the guy right behind me pulled in behind me in, I don't know, some Ford thing, and he looked at me and he said, how do you like that car? I said, I really liked it. I thought it was a pretty hot car. He said, that's really great. He said, I'm in the market for a new car. I've been thinking about that. What do you think? Do you think I should get it? And I said, well, I really enjoy driving it, but you ought to rent one yourself and drive it around for a day. He said, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Well, if you think about it, I will tell you, I mean, Ford just made a sale that they weren't going to get otherwise. Rather than go through the hassle of a dealer, they could come rent the car and have it for a day or a couple of days and drive it around in a relatively low pressure environment and get a feel for whether they liked it or not. And this guy was this guy was pretty excited about it. He said he was going to buy one either for him or for his wife. Of course, the downside of that is that if you get one of those cars and you really don't like it. I got picked up by a coworker the other day, actually out at LAX, and she had rented a Ford 500, which is the Taurus replacement, and she couldn't stand this car, and it was a brand new car, and indeed half the things in the car were still covered with plastic or that little film coating. But you could just, as opposed to the Mustang, which just felt cool. The Ford 500 did not feel cool. You did not feel cool in this car. It was sort of all plastic all the time. But I will tell you, nothing can feel less cool than driving around in a Pontiac minivan. Hey, make some So the next topic on today's podcast is about spotting famous people in airports. I've got to tell you, I'm a bit slow on the uptake on recognizing people that I haven't seen for a while. You know, I'll recognize a face as familiar, and there's been a lot of studies that say that's just sort of genetically hardwired in our brains, that we actually recognize faces more than anything, and that comes through evolution when we were part of tribes, even before we had languages. Indeed, there are some computer scientists have studied and have hypothesized about using faces instead of passwords, with the whole idea that people find it much easier to remember a face than they do some random string of numbers, letters, and special characters. But anyhow, like I said, I recognize a face as familiar, but at least for me, it takes me, at least sort of 5 seconds of and looking and sort of processing inside my head to be able to place that face. This isn't a problem when it's somebody that I actually know, a former work colleague, maybe somebody I went to college with, because they're typically going through the same thing. They're looking at me, we've been seeing each other for a while, we're trying to place each other. You know, we see people out of context, out of the environment with which we associate them, and so it takes, an extra bit of time to recognize them. The times that this delayed processing has caused me problems, though, has been with when the people that I'm trying to recognize, when that person's a celebrity. You do enough travel and you run into some celebrities. Although I will tell you, I seem to have been on a bit of a streak lately. A couple of weeks ago, walking out of the Orange County Admirals Club, I almost ran straight into Vin Diesel. And it's funny, one of those things where I walked out of the elevator, I thought I recognized the person, and then I had to turn around and look at him. And it was enough, I think he gets that enough that he kind of looked at me, smiled, and walked into the elevator. And then actually last Friday, coming out of San Francisco, I was actually looking up while I was retying my shoe. And I looked at a guy who was just kind of standing there waiting to be wanted. And he looked a little disheveled. His hair was kind of funny. He had sort of a scraggly goatee. And actually looked like he was sort of in kind of the pants almost looked like pajamas. Was looking at him because he looked familiar, and I finally recognized him, finally clicked. There's the actor Sean Penn. And I was actually a bit embarrassed that I'd been looking at him so long. I felt kind of bad for the guy because he's sitting there waiting to be wanted. It's not like he could, go anyplace else. I ended up sort of diving into the bookstore right there, looking for a magazine. Coming out of the bookstore, and I got on the motorized, the moving walkway that runs you down to some of the United terminals. I found myself right behind him again on that moving walkway. Now it started to be a little embarrassing to me. I didn't want him to think that I was stalking him, especially given his reputation for punching out photographers and whatnot. And so I sort of took a hard left into the food court and ordered some breakfast at the Mexican place. I go back to the table, I've got my tray, I sit down, I'm putting the salsa on the eggs. I look up to see Sean Penn sitting 10 feet away from me at a table straight across from me drinking a smoothie. Now I'm starting to feel a little sorry for the guy. He looked a bit lost, sort of wandering around the terminal. Taking a public flight was something new for this guy. And actually, you kind of see fewer and fewer celebrities nowadays because they are all, flying charter. But here's sort of Sean Penn just sort of wandering around on his own. No retinue. And he looked a little bit bewildered. Or maybe he just could have been hungover. I don't know. I will tell you, though, some years back, probably the most impressive sort of celebrity sighting I had was I was in Newark. And I was flying Continental. I don't know, Christ, I was just trying to get out of Newark. And I was in Continental. It was just snowing to beat the band. We were getting a whole series of rolling delays. And a bunch of us were just hanging around the gate just trying to get on the plane. And there in the gate area was Wynton Marsalis, the jazz and classical trumpeter. And I recognized him. I've almost all his classical trumpet CDs. I just think he's great. And he was just sitting there with everybody else trying to get on a plane, and he had another guy traveling with him. And what I was really impressed by was when people came up, people would recognize him, came up to talk with him, asked him for his autograph, and he actually had either cassettes or CDs, and he would sign them with a Sharpie and give them to the people. And he never tried, and the guy who was with him never tried to get in between Marsalis and the people who were trying to talk to him. And it was just, he was just there with us, and he seemed to really enjoy the enjoy the discussion with the folks. And people were treating him respectfully, but on the same token, he was treating his fans respectfully. And I just thought that was probably one of the most impressive sort of interactions, natural interactions that I've seen in a travel situation. I don't know. Like I said, I've seemed to run into a series of celebrities, and you'll hear some bad stories, and they'll usually make the news. But I think for the most part, what I've found is that actually most travelers try and give these celebrities a bit of space and give them a bit of respect that, you know, they're traveling, they're just trying to get from point A to point B. Give them space, and they give the rest of us space, and things work out okay. But it does make for some good stories. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle. The last topic on today's podcast is some thoughts about ruts, well-worn paths that we all get into. When is a rut a pattern, something that's actually helpful? And when is it a rut where we sort of trapped ourselves in a day-to-day grind? You know, a routine or a pattern can give you sort of a comfortable space to inhabit, a sort of a place where you're confident, you know what's going on. You know, it gives you a comfort zone from which you can think, do, branch, you know, do other new things. You know, when I'm traveling, and I think a lot of travelers get this way, you get to your airport, you just get into a groove. You know things, you're efficient, you hit the ground, you know where the tickets are, you go through security, you know the right way to go through security, and you're just moving. And everything's very efficient. It's like clockwork. And even when things change just a little bit, it's okay, because you've got your pattern down, and everything's sort of practiced and refined. When does that turn into, though, a rut? It's almost so comfortable, it sort of has you trapped. In travel, that's a very interesting space, because actually the whole travel industry is all around customer retention. It's all around keeping you, almost like keeping you in a rut. The whole idea around frequent traveler, frequent flyer, frequent sleeper, frequent driver programs is all about trying to keep you within the American Airlines family, the United family, the Marriott family, and keeping you. And when you are frequently traveling from, say, Chicago to San Francisco or San Francisco to New York, trying to keep you, on an airline standpoint, keep you on those same flights, and in a hotel standpoint, keep you coming back to the same hotel week after week after week. Now, from a business traveler standpoint, there's some great things about that. You get to know the people at the desk. They start to comp you better rooms. You can start to build those relationships. They know you. They watch out for you. They do you favors. You leave your dirty clothes there on Friday. They send them out, get them cleaned, and then when you show back up Monday, you know, you've got clean clothes already loaded in your room, and that's just made that travel that much easier for you. Of course, you know, when does that start to look like a rut? Well, you know, I guess the first thing could be that you're wearing the same clothes every week. That could certainly be a rut. The second thing is that when you travel to that city, wherever it is, when you're staying in the same hotel week after week, you end up eating at the same places, walking the same block, seeing the same, you know, sort of sights. Part of travel is, you know, certainly you're there to get something done, whatever work is there to be able to get done. But part of the good part of travel is seeing something new. So last week when I was in San Francisco, I kind of felt like I'd been staying in the same places pretty frequently. Over on Market Street, and so I made a conscious decision to sort of break out of where I was normally staying and go over and stay in Soma. So stay in the south of Market District. So actually, there's a relatively new courtyard there on, what is that, 2nd and Folsom. And so I ended up staying there. And I'd never stayed there before, but I knew about it. And I knew the neighborhood. And so I said, I made a conscious decision to get out of my regular rut where I knew where all the Starbucks were and I knew where all the bars were and stuff like that, and instead go over here and spent some time walking and ended up eating at some new restaurants. So I purposely bumped my way out of that rut. I guess one of the ways to tell that you're really sort of in a rut is when small changes really upset you. Actually at O'Hare they've been going through a lot of construction, specifically in Terminal 3. I do tend to fly American probably more than any other airline. They've been doing a lot of construction there, and things have been moving around. They've moved around where the platinum gates are and where the security checkpoints are, and it's almost like every time I go in, something has moved. I found myself getting very upset internally and getting really sort of torqued up with these changes because they screwed up my pattern. They screwed up my routine. They pushed me sort of into suboptimal actions because instead of always turning left when I got in from the parking garage, now I had to turn right and I had to go farther this way instead of that way. And I started thinking, it started churning me up around, I'm not making the best use of my time, and that's sort of wasting and burning minutes here. Burning time I'd rather be spending someplace else, and actually my routine was all about efficiency, having a pattern down, so I'm spending the least amount of time doing and thinking about this piece of my travel. And I thought about that, and I said, and that's what I guess, maybe that was the first piece of self-awareness, and any good 12-step program will tell you that self-awareness is the first step, that I had gotten in a rut. And so as I started thinking about that, I've actually gone out and made conscious decisions to stay at some different places. This is the first time I've ever stayed at the Mystic Marriott. Also, trying and flying some different airlines, even though I've got status on American and United. Yeah, that's just some thoughts, I think, as we all kind of get into these ruts and we get into comfort zones. I guess that is the definition of a rut, that it takes effort to bump yourself out of it. But at least for myself, I've found that when I do bump myself out of that rut, I usually find something new that I find and I like and I enjoy. Okay, that's it. That's a wrap on Travel Commons Podcast number 5. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, comments, moans, groans, cries of anguish. I appreciate any cognitive thoughts that come my way. You can either send them to me at directly via email at comments@travelcommons.com. You can always leave comments on the travelcommons.com website or always on the podcastalley.com website. I check that comment board every couple of days, and like I said, I've really appreciated the comments that folks have left there. So, hope you enjoyed it. I hope you have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye now.